By the way, it's 9 o'clock, and this is WBAI New York, and it's also the Hotel Pennsylvania in New York, where we're broadcasting live from the Fifth Hope Conference. And again, still time to get down here. A lot of going on all weekend long. www.hope.net for more information, or just come by Hotel Pennsylvania across the street from Penn Station. Now, Rob, I have to say, you know, the first conference that I went to in Europe was the Galactic Hacker Party in 1989.
Boy, and were we young.
I have to say, that conference just inspired me as a person to just do more, because I just saw so many people from around the world who were so cool and so into things. And from that point, I started thinking, well, you know, how can we do something like this in the States? And, you know, in 1993, I went to, what was it, HEU? Or
Hacking at the End of the Universe.
Hacking at the End of the Universe, which was another, it was a campsite thing, the first one of those. And again, you know, after 4 years, I said to myself, you know, we've got to be able to do something like this in the States. And fortunately, the next year, we were able to get together with a bunch of people, yourself being one of them. And we organized the first conference here, Hackers on Planet Earth. But, you know, none of it would have happened were it not for the conferences in Europe that that so many of us were inspired by. So I think we owe you all a great debt of thanks for putting on those conferences and getting us here. Do you remember GHP, Galactic Hacker Party? That was in the Paradiso in Amsterdam.
Yeah, Paradiso is, you have to picture an old church building. Complete with everything, the stained glass windows, everything, completely turned into a rock temple. The Stones played there, they record videos there, Bowie comes there, even though there's only, it has only a capacity of what, 1,000-1,500 people, but all the big bands still like to come there because that's where they started. It was one of those things, and we completely turned it into a hacker thing, much like this hotel in 89 when people really had no idea what this was and what hacking was, and suddenly all their microphone cables through the building, or all the audio cables through the building, were turned into Ethernet cables or serial cables or whatever we used back then. It was weird. It was funny.
Yeah. Now, you're planning something for next year. Tell us something about that.
We're still in the sort of planning phase. We're still working on what it is exactly that we do. We have no location for it yet, but we do plan to do something next year in the summer in Holland. We just don't know what yet.
Great. Every 4 years, something happens in Holland, and on the other every 4 years, something happens in Germany, and in between.
Every 2 years. 1 year before us, every 2 years, there's something in Germany.
Yeah, that's sort of what I was trying to say. But basically, you're next in Holland, then we'll have another conference in 2006, most likely. Then in 2007 will be Germany, 2008 us again, and then 2009 it'll be you again.
Something like that.
Well, we'll
see. There's sort of a long galactic cycle developing here.
But if you have a country,
if you have a city or a country that is under your control and you wish to do hacker conferences,
yeah,
feel free to break this cycle and somehow do cool stuff that is not
open
part of
to any country. So yeah, please, you know, Togo, whatever, just come to us. And
your homework assignment is to come up with an algorithm that explains this, the Olympics, and the presidential election.
Yeah, I was wondering, what would have happened if we had scheduled our conference for, say, late August in this hotel, and we had done it before the Republicans had decided when to schedule theirs. And, you know, next time,
it would have been preempted.
2008, I think I'm going to try and schedule it so that it really messes up their schedule. It's the ultimate hack. Nah, they'll just kick us out.
You know, there were Republicans like floating around the hotel.
Yeah, every
yesterday.
So often. Every so often, they Republicans were come in to check the phone lines, because they've installed a whole bunch of phone lines here too for the convention. So they,
unlike ours, theirs might work.
Yeah, theirs are working.
No, I remember during setup yesterday, it was like a spectacle.
Yeah,
the Republicans were here, and everyone had to take a picture.
All these people with suits. Fat people with suits.
Yeah, these are the phone outlets marked RNC. Don't tamper with them. Don't do anything with them. They are for the Republicans.
They're booby-trapped. We got there first. Okay, so as many of you as possible, please come to the thing in Holland next year. When is an announcement going to be made as far as... Is there a name yet?
There's not a real name yet, and we're still working on everything. So, no, there's nothing definitive yet.
Okay, well, keep listening. There will be soon, and it's always
great.
Stay
tuned.
All right. Is there anybody else that we...
You know, Emmanuel, I think I saw... He's behind the column now, but I think Dan Morgan is over there.
Is Dan Morgan over there? Well, did I see him up to the stage?
Is he over there?
Or were you hallucinating?
No, well, it was a while ago. He may have walked away.
Well, Dan Morgan was here. He was on a panel before talking about when corporations attack, along with a bunch of other people that have had similar tales of woe. And, that was... That was quite a story, what happened to him. He ran Satellite Watch News and was driven out of business by the powers that be. And it's great to have him here in New York, too, where he can tell a story to a receptive audience. There are a lot of stories out there to tell, and we're trying to bring as many of them to you as possible. So that's one of them, and I'm sure there'll be more throughout the weekend.
Once again, you can see his video tomorrow, provided it makes it here through Amtrak, and see exactly what he was doing. So,
Bernie, tell us something about this video. This is the... The direct
pirate video 9, the DBS hack. Dan spoke about this earlier today. It's a really interesting documentary that covers the cat and mouse game that was going on between satellite TV hackers and DirecTV and other satellite programming providers. Technology countermeasures and electronic countermeasures and electronic countermeasures. It went back and forth and back and forth. DirecTV would figure out some way to prevent people from downloading the signal and decrypting it, and the hackers would figure out a way around that, and then they'd another countermeasure, and it just went back and forth. And Dan did a great job documenting this whole saga, and it's very entertaining too. He just it had a lot of human story behind it as well. And that video, an hour long, which we're going to show here tomorrow in the movie room, is part of what got Dan Morgan shut down by DirecTV, owned by General Motors and Hughes Aerospace. And there was nothing in the video that specifically said how to receive a satellite programming without paying for it. It was a documentary that explained what was going on in the community. And it's really fascinating. So everybody who's here should try to catch this film tomorrow in the movie room, and the schedule's posted on the door.
This is something that can happen to anybody, really. Anybody that messes with information and gets a large corporation angry for just saying the truth.
What's interesting is the corporation, DirecTV, was not even an American company. I mean, it was an American company. Houston, a lot of companies that were doing this were in Canada, and a lot of companies were raided in Canada at the behest of an American corporation who got the Royal Canadian Mounted Police to raid dozens and dozens of people who were hacking the satellite signal. And it was really an interesting precedent. What he pointed out in the film was that the Royal Canadian Mounted Police themselves were watching DirecTV on their side of the border, which DirecTV specifically prohibited. So it's kind of a lot of interesting irony in the film. It's worth checking out.
Okay, again, that'll be taking place in the movie room. Red Hack, do you want to tell us a little more about the movie room again?
Well, I mean, it's running 24 hours. The schedule's on the door. A lot of interesting documentaries. I'm watching a lot of things I've never seen before. I'm having a great time with it, so I think all of you would, too.
We're showing...
I have the back open so that you can see what's going on. If it catches your eye, come in, sit down for a bit. You know?
Yeah, I saw a lot of people crowded by the entrance looking in, but they seemed afraid to go in.
Yeah,
so
no.
Don't be afraid. You know, they were showing North Korean propaganda films before.
Yeah.
And they're in English for some reason. One of our friends from Holland brought this over.
Emmanuel, I enjoyed the scene of the parade in Pyongyang with 1 million people marching. It was just awesome seeing this.
Coordination with they were all holding up different colored things.
Flipping their colored flags in perfect synchronization. I don't know how they managed it.
See, that's enthusiasm. That's, you know, the kind of enthusiasm that we should have. People coming into the film room to see that. That's it's a lot of fun. So, not just hacker films. It's all kinds of different things that we all might be interested in. But again, it's running all night long, and we'll have all kinds of surprises and fun things, and maybe rebroadcast some of the talks up here. We'll see if we can do that.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So, is anybody else up here? But okay, Dan Morgan's not here then.
I thought I saw him before.
All right, and Parto's on his way up.
Chris, who's over there, I don't know if he can even leave the board for a moment to come up here.
It's Chris, our AV guy, who saved the day for us.
Oh, he's got a microphone. So we can talk to him without him leaving his board. That's even better.
He has a microphone. Chris, do you have a microphone that works up there? I guess not.
Okay, well.
The only sound.
All right, we're giving him something to work on now. Okay, well, when you get that working, just butt in and say hi, and we can ask you some questions about AV and how it all works and sometimes doesn't. It's no small task getting this whole place set up and running.
Okay, this is working.
Oh, there he is. Chris, you have a whole lot of people helping out, setting things up. Everything up and running so far?
Yeah, so far things are going great. What really made the difference this time is we've got a whole lot of great volunteers that have just been doing a phenomenal job and working, you know, 12 hours straight. We worked for setting up yesterday from 8 in the morning till a little after midnight last night. And then the same people came back at 7:30 in the morning and were working till a couple hours ago.
You might think it's an easy thing, getting microphones and sound and the picture working. It's not. It takes a lot of coordination and a lot of ability that I certainly don't have. And so I'm extremely happy that there are people out there willing to sacrifice their valuable time, come down here, help us out, get this thing set up, and just make it all run so smoothly. So, again, Chris, thank you so much for all you've done.
Thank you.
And do you still need any volunteers?
Yes, we still need some people to help run the cameras, especially anyone who wants to see several programs in the B track and would not mind running cameras while they're doing it, and has experience running camcorders as well. That would be great because we're still short on people there, and we have a lot of people. We've already used, you know, 10 hours today, and we have them slated to work most of the day tomorrow. So it'd be great if we could spread the work around a little more.
Yeah, we don't want anybody to burn out working too many hours. So again, if you
can
help out,
we did that last time, and it was.
Well, if you can help out, go see Chris after the show, and I'm certain that your efforts will be appreciated. Volunteers in general are what make the Hope Conferences happen. There are so many aspects to it, and of course, this time we had all kinds of design work as well. People staying up late into the night, just decorating the place, making it look really cool. We have network people, people that help organize the speakers and make sure that everybody is where they're supposed to be. People making sure that the cameras are working, and all kinds of other things. So, yeah, it's not just what you see on stage. There's a whole lot that goes into this, and it takes months of planning. And it's a lot of fun, though. It's a lot of fun to have it all happen and to have people here. Okay, so I've rattled on long enough about that. We're going to take questions at about 9:30, I guess, if people want to line up to the microphone. It's 9:10 now, according to this clock, so we have about 20 minutes before we do that. So if there's anyone else that we have to talk to as far as speakers or a guest or anybody else, please bring them on up.
The guy in charge of network is coming up.
What's coming up?
Our guy in charge of networking is coming up.
Oh, networking. Okay, good.
He's about to leave for the day. He hasn't slept since he got here. So he's on his way up, and hopefully he won't fall asleep in the elevator. He'll be able to tell us
what's somebody going up and down and not getting off the elevator. It might be our networking guy.
You know, you mentioned taking questions, and I saw Rebel in the audience just itching.
Well, we'll take his question. He can go down to the other side of the building, and we'll take it from there. Well, only kidding. We'll take questions from
tonight. Everybody. We'll let him call in.
Let's see how many phones he has. All right. I'll read some mail. Read some listener mail, and is that? I see Adam coming in.
Yeah, so there he is.
Well, I'll read a couple of pieces of mail and get him set up and ask him what's going on. Dear Off the Hook, I love your show, your magazine. For the few weeks now I've been working at a desk job, your archive shows get me through the day. I laugh, I cry, I shake my fist at the MPAA and the rest of corporate America. I'm over in Vancouver, Canada, so whenever I hear about the laws you guys are charged with breaking, I look them up on the web, since most of the time I don't know how they would apply to me here in Canada. So thanks for making my mental gears turn. Signed, Lee. And we get letters like this all the time from people that are just happy to hear us on the radio and listen to us in all kinds of different places all around the world. And again, you know, having us on the net, having us being broadcast over the web, various other radio stations, shortwave, just getting out to more and more people, that makes all the difference. When we started the show back in 1988, we just had the radio station. And, you know, it's kind of silly to say we just had, because that's a big deal. 50,000-watt radio station in the middle of New York City and in the middle of the commercial band. That's a lot of people right there. But since then, due to the efforts of many people like the people here, we've reached so many more, and it's made such a big difference, because we can get calls from London and from Australia and from all over the place. that we never could have reached before. And Porkchop, actually, you were instrumental back in 1997 in getting us to actually start archiving our shows and bringing real audio into the picture. We had never done that before. We had just broadcast the show on the station, and that was it. You know, you couldn't listen to a show in the past. What was the process leading up to all that? How did
that
we...
was more or less, well, back in Beyond Hope, when we had the Beyond Hope at the Puck Building down on Houston Street, somebody wanted a high-end computer to encode for real audio to bring the stream over to another distribution server, and everybody could hear the conference live, and it was a great idea. And I had a brand new 100 megahertz machine, and so I donated it, and we ran the stream off of it. And then when the conference was over, I said, "Hey, I can do this for the radio show every week," and so I did with another group. My group and June's group is basically the same group of people that's been constantly, new people have been coming in, old people have died out. And basically we had, I think the first couple of weeks we had 40 listener capacity, and we actually got 30 or 40 listeners, up to, I think when I stopped doing it, back when we started doing the film, we had a capacity of about 450 real audio listeners, and we were just starting with the MP3 thing. Of course, now real audio is a lot less cool than it was, or there are more cool things instead of real audio. So we've gone from real audio to MP3. But yeah, that was new stuff for us, new stuff for BAI too, new stuff for radio shows in general.
I think it's indicative of the whole hacker spirit to just come up to somebody and say, you know, I can do this, I can make this happen that we haven't done yet, that we didn't think we could do easily. And Porkchop made it happen. And then more people started helping out, and that pretty much brought us to the point where, you know, the radio station streams all the time, and we stream all the shows, and we have an incredible archive of shows. And I like occasionally just putting on an old show from, say, 10, 15 years ago and just hearing how things were different. And how the phone system sounded different. When you connect calls, you heard all kinds of things you don't hear anymore, different kinds of rings, clicks on the way to the connection, the overall quality of the phone line. So a lot has happened, and I'm sure a lot will happen in the years ahead. So it's good to be paying attention so that you know when things are changing, and playing with the technology as much as possible. Adam is here, and he has been putting together the network downstairs. And, well, working tirelessly.
Thanks. I've been up since 11 a.m. yesterday, so I have a pretty decent brain capacity, but I'm losing motor skills in my mouth, so I don't talk so well right now. And I don't usually talk and do public speaking that well either, so we'll see how this goes. But the big news is that after about, I guess, 8 hours of constant pestering and social engineering by Gothchick, she berated Verizon and MCI into actually dealing with the T1 issues we were having. And as of about half an hour ago, we have both T1s up and running.
All right. We all know it's important to the geeks.
Yeah, it's amazing how every time, no matter how far in advance we plan it out, Verizon always comes through in the end and screws it up. Well, that's what they do, you know, it seems that way. And that's why the European hacker conferences work so well, because they don't have Verizon.
Try to buy a good T1 in Verizon area.
Dan Morgan is here. Dan,
how are
you? Welcome to New York. So good to have you here.
Much fun. I've really enjoyed myself.
Yeah.
I've actually got some peace and quiet for the last 6 hours.
Tell us some of the things that you talked about on your panel.
Well, we talked about publishing a satellite magazine and meeting up with DirecTV. We published a Satellite Hacker's Guide newsletter. I guess a newsletter is a good thing to say. And we...
New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and beyond. Get ready for a close encounter of the only kind. As the Midnight Ravers present on Friday, July 9th, 2004, on WBAI 99.5 FM. Intimate Encounters.
I'm gonna tell you what love can do.
Ballads of pure soulful emotion. This show is guaranteed to warm your heart and bring joy to your soul. So snuggle up and get intimate with someone you love and join the Midnight Ravers Friday, July 9th, 2004 on WBAI 99.5 FM from 12 midnight to 3 a.m. as they present Intimate Encounters. 3 hours of pure, unadulterated ballads of soul.
The Midnight Ravers, where every show is a special.
I'm talking about the power of love now. Because
they don't like what someone is saying. Always support 2600. They do one hell of a great job, and I'm very proud of Emmanuel and the team. Everybody involved did a real great job, and thank you very much for your efforts.
It's really an honor to have people like Dan here who understand the importance of speaking up and very often pay a very dear price for that. But I think we're all here to support him and support each other in those endeavors.
You know, Emmanuel, right after you made that statement about Verizon sucking, the ISDN line went dark.
Oh.
For 60 seconds, it's back.
All right.
But watch what you say. They're listening.
Well, by the way, we should talk about how we're connected tonight to the radio station. Mike, you want to tell us something about this?
Sure. We don't actually have an ISDN, so we have two analog phone lines. I guess we're using one analog phone line in this new device called the Zephyr X-Port, which is basically it's a fancy modem with some AAC codecs, which is sort of like MP3, only different. So on a plain old analog phone line, we're transmitting radio quality audio to the radio station, and when it works pretty well. It's this is the second time tonight that we've had about a minute where we have to go run over the machine and kick it, but it's pretty neat technology.
Yeah, in 1997 we used a Zephyr unit. We had ISDN line installed at the Puck building downtown, and we connected to the ISDN number at the radio station. But this time we're using a regular POTS line, and that's a first for us to be able to do that. And it also means that theoretically anybody with a phone line can get FM quality sound if they connect to an ISDN line. So it's getting to the stage where phone sound, I think, can improve quite a bit. And I don't know, you could have your own FM. Imagine talking to somebody on the phone and it doesn't sound like they're on the phone. I think one day that will be the ancient past where, you know, you sound like, you know, the Sprint sound. That's what I'm talking about. That will be a thing of the past, and it'll sound like you're talking to somebody right next to you. Okay, I guess we're ready to take some questions. So if people want to line up and, you know, make like you're calling in, I guess that means Rebel will be first, so... Just stand right next to the microphone there. I'm going to read one more letter, though, before
I'm going to hold the microphone.
Wait for the phone lines to start lighting up. I used to get telemarketing calls from a live person until I signed up for the Do Not Call list. Ever since I did that, the live people stopped calling, and I now get calls from recordings. I have anonymous call rejection and call intercept on my line, but that doesn't work because I get calls on my caller ID with the number 802-034-7800. I may have to change my number. I tried Call Trace, and that didn't work. Signed, John from Brooklyn. Well, John, what you're seeing is manipulation of caller ID data, where basically any number can be sent, and it's a number, the 034 exchange cannot be dialed, so you can't call them back. They are sending, probably the area code 802, which I believe is Vermont. It's Utah, I'm sorry, Utah.
That's 801.
The 802 is Vermont? All right.
Isn't 802 the Caribbean?
No, that's...
All right, 802 is somewhere.
Yeah, 809 is the Caribbean.
My question is...
What is this, a test? No, 802 is Vermont. Okay, so probably the telemarketer is in Vermont somewhere. They're messing with the rest of the numbers.
But wait, what use is a telemarketing call if you can't contact them? I mean, how are you going
to
buy their product?
You're supposed to pick up the phone and talk to them and buy their product when they annoy you. They don't want to be annoyed by you. But when we get telemarketing numbers, we generally spread them around so you can bother them whenever you want. And I'm sure lots of people will want to do that. This kind of thing is tough because they are sending caller ID. But, you know, the call trace thing is another ripoff. And I imagine he dialed *57 or something, paid $1.50 for the right to report them or something like that. You don't have to go that route. You can go to the Call Annoyance Bureau that they're required to maintain, and they'll do it for free, and they'll track down the number that called you and make them stop. All right, let's take our first listener phone call. And good evening, you're on the air.
Guess who the first person is to talk?
I don't know, Rebel. How many phone lines do you have when you call us? 50? 60? How many? Rebel's documenting this, by the way. He's got his own camera crew.
Well,
do you have a question this week?
Yeah, I'd like to mention.
You have it written down? Okay.
Of course.
All right, let's...
The best part is I asked him earlier how many times he's been on the show, because he's got to have like little ticks on his bedpost that he marks off.
He told us when the 10th anniversary was, and we marked that well by, I think, being preempted, so...
I'd like to mention that you can bill calls to your cell phone. I'm going to be speaking tomorrow at 8, at around this time, at 8 o'clock tomorrow night.
In Area C.
On the third track.
Third track. But something else I wanted to mention, people who want to talk who have not been scheduled, you can sign up for the third track downstairs, I believe, or is it?
No, you can sign up right outside Area C. There's three giant blue pieces of poster board and a Sharpie. Don't steal the Sharpie, please.
Yeah.
And just sign up.
Yeah, and then we'll publicize that throughout the whole conference so people will know to come to your talk or to avoid your talk. Case may be. Go ahead.
I noticed that you can bill calls to your cell phone. I have a 917-449 exchange, and I could just go to any Verizon phone here in the New York City area and bill a third number call or collect call to my cell phone. This can only work on local calls, not long distance.
You can do third number billing to your cell number.
Right, any 917-449 exchange will accept
that. What company is that?
917-449 is the Sprint PCS exchange.
I just social engineered that information out of him. Now I know what his phone company is. Sprint PCS, that's what you use, huh?
Now, also, you...
Everybody's trying
to dance away from that, I know, but... okay.
Though calling cards don't work anymore. When you used to be able to use...
Oh, wait, let's stick on this for a second. Okay. So what you're saying is, anybody with a Sprint PCS phone may be susceptible to somebody third-party billing just
but
by...
No, they call for acceptance. The thing is that they can be called... My cell phone can be called collect. I could accept a collect call.
Mm-hmm.
I can charge, let's say, information. Information costs money from Verizon payphones. You call 0, area code 212, or anywhere in the New York City area, and then 555-1212.
Mm-hmm.
You bill it to your cell phone, pick up your cell phone, and accept the charges.
But don't you wind up paying for it on the cell phone?
No, I've been doing this for...
Oh, wait, that's the other part you didn't mention. You don't actually get the bill?
No.
Oh. Well, that's an important little fact there. Okay.
I didn't try.
Gee whiz, that is something. Well, I know back when Kevin was in prison, we figured out a way that he could call. Kevin, do you remember how we did this? You would call my cell phone some. If you looked at Freedom Downtime, you'll see I'm talking to him on my cell phone. And you're not supposed to be able to do that, right? You're not supposed to be able to call cell phones from prison because you have to call collect.
No, what I used to do is have somebody three-way you in.
Uh-huh.
Right? So because I'd call somebody, I could only call collect, and then I'd have that person that I called three-wayed in.
And they don't like that. Yeah. No.
That's actually a rule violation. I got busted for it a couple times, and they write you up, and they give you, like, extra duty. You get a thing called a shot. For doing so, and
you got
they
the
really
shot. What?
That's the terminology in the Bureau of Prisons. They call it a shot.
Wow.
It's like an incident report. It's welcome to the jungle out there. So, somebody's cell phones.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's definitely they frown on it. But I knew that when I was in custody, they used to monitor my calls all the time, and I used to do three ways all the time, but they didn't do anything about it. I think they were more interested in what the conversation was going to be rather than the rule being violated.
Yeah, we used to do that regularly when Bernie was in prison. He would call me. Remember Bernie?
Yes, I would call some special number that was set up, wouldn't I?
You would call me.
Are we supposed to be revealing all this?
Well,
the statute of limitations has run out, I hope.
Well, I don't know. I'm still on probation. I'm the only one who could probably get in trouble about now.
All right, cover your ears. So you would call a number that would do what exactly?
I would call a special number that I think would be forwarded to the studio.
We did it manually.
And I would have to call collect because that's the only way you can make calls from prison, most prisons anyway. So I had to make these collect calls, and I mean, almost in a week, it really kept me going. Calling almost every week into Off the Hook and getting feedback and support from people really kept me alive, frankly.
We had two lines, and what we did was on one line we called the special studio number, the other line you called us collect, and then we just freeway.
And it worked very well.
There was a period, I don't know if it was you, Fiber, or Kevin, where you could call a cell phone directly, collect, and we would never get the bill.
Yeah, I called
That was Kevin.
Was that you, Kevin?
Yeah, so, I called you collect a few times, and for some reason you wouldn't get the bill. I don't know why.
I mean, you know, I would gladly pay the bill, but apparently their billing system wasn't set up that it could handle that for some reason. And then that got turned off.
Yeah, something interesting, when I first got arrested in Raleigh, North Carolina in 95, they put me in this county jail called in Smithfield, North Carolina, and somehow they had these private companies that would put in these prison-type telephones. And one of the other guys accidentally dialed like a 113, and it dropped him into a dial tone. Ooh. And from that dial tone, they can call anywhere in the world for free, right? So everybody was using it except me. Because if I was using it, it was to start a nuclear war. But if anyone else was using it, it's, you know, making a free phone call. So I always called collect.
Wow, how come you didn't discover the 113?
Because I decided it would be it wouldn't be a good idea to be playing on the telephone. Yes.
Did you program the 113? Did you set it up?
I don't think the statute of limitations is right.
Oh, okay. Next hope, we'll talk about that. Another question, Rebel. Make it fast. There's people waiting.
I'd also like to mention that there are 800 numbers that are being taken over by sex lines. In other words, if you dial 1-800-NYCT-BUS, like New York City Transit Bus, or 1-800-GET-DIGITAL, or one of those 1-800 vanity numbers, it goes to the same number. And I'm going to be demonstrating that on my talk tomorrow at 8. It goes to a same recording, which I'll be playing tomorrow at 8.
And people can ask you questions there, right?
Yeah.
Good. All right. Next question.
Hi, I'm Hartman from Louisville, Kentucky. And I was wondering, what are some of the specials on the Freedom Downtown DVD? Specifically, do you have that one screensaver-looking thing with all the media icons?
Wait, I'm not sure what you're asking. What?
When you were talking about the media, there's a bunch of icons.
A bunch of the media.
Exactly.
Freedom's Greatest Hope or something along those lines.
Yeah, what are you asking, how we did that?
ABC rotating.
If you have like that as a...
Oh, as a screensaver.
Screensaver or something.
That's actually a really good idea, which I never thought of before. No, we did that inside of Edit DV. That was an effect done in there. That's not actually a screensaver. But that's a good idea.
That is a good idea. But, you know, so many of them have consolidated since then that it'll be a lot smaller than it was, you know, all these different entities. But, it's a cool effect. We could
there are a lot of really good specials on that disc, and one I really do want to point out because it was actually really amazing. Our friend Bernie S. here nearly took out the head of the mafia in Philadelphia.
That's a story on the DVD. You can tell it briefly.
He told this great, great version of the story. I don't want him to tell it here because it took him half an hour to do it before. But there's this half-hour section of the DVD, and when I was sitting there, I was amazed. I was hanging on every word, and you really have to see it. It's on the second disc, the special disc. I think the second disc is as long as the movie itself, isn't it?
Yeah, it's we have something like 3 hours of deleted material or material we didn't use. And some of it is just priceless, but it had nothing to do with the subject matter. Like, for instance, we did this whole tour of Foundation Imaging in California because we were friends with some people over there. And they just took us on this incredible tour, and they're talking about all their high-tech equipment, which, you know, really isn't that high-tech by today's standards, and how it takes, like, hours and hours and hours to render a single frame. And just things that have changed so much. I mean, TV shows were being rendered on Amigas back then. And now you have the equivalent of Craze doing it. It's unbelievable just going on this tour and seeing how things changed. And so we included it there. It really had nothing to do with Kevin's story, but we filmed it anyway and saved it for now.
Thank you.
All right. Next question.
Hi, I'm Mike. I'm from Ottawa.
Ottawa, Canada.
Yeah, absolutely. Kind of an inquiry as to what your thoughts are on the recent ruling of SOCAN versus Canadian ISPs. SOCAN, if some people here don't know, is the Canadian equivalent of the RIAA, and how they were trying to, so much as what RIAA did was gather information from the ISPs as to who was downloading, and still ongoing today. The ISPs fought this to maintain the privacy of their users, and they won.
I remember that, and mm-hmm. That was a good thing. And I remember also hearing, was it Paul Martin, the new prime minister, who said that they were going to fix this?
Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So what exactly does that mean? Are they going to change the rules? What?
It depends. I mean, Paul Martin is no longer minority government, so I mean, they'll go to Parliament, but it's it's up to the courts to decide from there.
How do people in Canada generally view what's going on in this country regarding MPAA, RIAA, that kind of thing? Is it something that they shake their heads at, or something that is just a few months delayed up there?
We get the news very quickly. I mean, we do get your news as well, but our views on it are being light. We're a bit scared of it because oftentimes Canada will often mimic the USA.
Well, that's what I mean. Is it delayed as far as...
It is delayed. We are usually in a year or a year and a half behind as far as policies are concerned, but I'm not sure. I mean, a lot of things could change in the next year or so.
So do you feel safe downloading music up there?
Or? Absolutely.
You do?
Absolutely.
You do.
I understand. I'm reading the policy from... I use Rogers Internet, which is a cable distributor. And the policy, then, they do not share any of the public information with any for any reason. So it's pretty safe.
Of course, the written policy often differs from what they actually do. But.
Yeah.
Okay. But one final question. I'm asking you the questions. But what's...
Sure.
Does the MPAA... have any kind of power over people there as far as
none whatsoever?
None whatsoever.
No, they are. I guess the MPA is they have sort of a branch of it, or was part of the SOCAN, which is the equivalent of the MPA, was somewhat founded by the MPA. But aside from that, they are totally independent. So,
all right, Canada, our same neighbors to the north. Thank you.
Thank you.
There's a lot of Canadians at this conference.
I know you.
Yeah. Hi, I'm Risk Taker. I'm from Germany.
And Risk Taker here did the translation of Freedom Downtime into German on the DVD.
You mentioned earlier how Satellite Watch magazine was shut down and how that could happen to anybody. Do you have an explanation why that hasn't happened to 2600 yet?
You know, Dan, what do you think? Are we due for this kind of a thing?
You've been lucky.
I have a lot of friends.
Actually, it's a wonderful thing, and as a matter of fact, if anything, unlike myself, when I got popped, I was doing talk radio. Did a show every Wednesday night about satellite, you know, the big hacking topic there.
I do a radio show every Wednesday night, too.
It's amazing how this hacking magazine's radio show... Anyway, I was kind of in a niche hacking business. Satellite TV is really niche-y. It's very small. So your actual subscriber base probably hasn't grown to a tenth of years or didn't grow to a tenth of years. This is a different type of hacking here. It's a very diversified... 2600 is very diversified. I wasn't. Everybody promised money. And God bless a few that did donate. And pretty substantial. I mean, to the tune of $5,000. And we needed about $1 million to win that thing. But anyway, at least someone did. If he ever does get in trouble, reach deep, protect what you have. Because when his print media is gone, who's the next one? Is there any more that do... what 2600 has done for everybody here? I don't think so.
Well, you know, I have to say, we were attacked back in 2000 by the MPAA, who sued us simply for having the DECSS code on our website. And, you know, it was scary, but I was never really afraid because so many people were there supporting us, not the least of which, of course, being the Electronic Frontier Foundation, who stood up and provided us with lawyers and defense and all that kind of a thing. And while we lost the case and we lost the appeal, I think we won the war because we got the word out about the Digital Millennium Copyright Act. And now, if you say DMCA, a lot of people know about it. And nobody knew about it before that. So I think there'll be a better candidate for someone who can actually overturn this law in the future. I'm just happy that we were able to play a part in getting to that stage. And yeah, you know, they could have done all kinds of horrible things to us. But I never doubted for a moment that there weren't enough people around to really make a big stink and to just be there when we needed them for whatever emotional support, whatever was needed. So, yeah, what Dan says definitely makes a lot of sense. And I think if we were focused on just one thing, for instance, if we just focused on computers or just focused on, say, VAX VMS and nothing else, yeah, maybe, you know, it would be easier to attack us just for that. But since we focus on so many different things, and since hacking encompasses such a wide variety of subject matter, you know, we all understand the importance of it continuing, even if we don't necessarily understand the material that's being defended or presented. So I think once we get all these different people under one roof and we agree that this kind of a thing is good, that's a lot of strength there. And I think we see that around today. So, yes, Jeff.
Yeah, quick question. And we talked about the magazine. We talked about the radio show. I'm just curious because this is kind of a first for me. But how many people are here because of the magazine? And then how many people are here because of the radio show? So just how many people are here because of the magazine? Just put your hand up. I'm curious.
The people in Radioland, boy, you can see that. That's something.
Okay, now who's here because of the radio show?
Did you put your hand up twice?
Yeah, what's up with that?
Come on.
No, they put up their other hand. Did you see that?
Yes, yes.
What's this guy about? Well, I'd say it's a little more for the magazine,
but a fair number. See, we don't get to see what's going on when we do the radio show, so this is kind of fun.
And how many people are here because of the Village Voice article this week? Well, I guess we know who reads what.
And then you got to ask how many lawyers are in the audience.
Well, let's not.
Well, I've wanted to ask for a number of years. How many are here because they want to be a groupie for anybody on this panel?
Your hands up. Did you see that? Okay. Well, you finished? Do you have another question?
Yeah, no, I'll finish. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Thanks again. Also, I just want to say a word for all the people who helped out in the DVD. We had so many people. We have 20 languages that were translated on that thing. 24 subtitle tracks. You figure it out. And basically what that means is people, and sometimes more than one person per language, got together and did the translation. And, you know, I don't know other languages, so I don't know how hard it is, but I imagine it's not an easy task to sit there and go through all these words and get them right and make sure that it makes sense in a different language. So I'd like to think this opens up to a lot more people to enjoy the film, understand the hacker culture a bit. Yes?
Hi, I'm Dan from Albany. The last couple of Grand Theft Auto games have featured voice performances by some of you. And as luck would have it, there's another installation due out this year. Can we expect another cameo?
Well, Laszlo, I think you're the person to ask this question of, because you're the one responsible for what happened in the past.
I have no official comment.
Well, for those who don't know, Laszlo got Bernie S. onto, Grand Theft Auto 3?
Grand Theft Auto 3.
And I was in which one?
Vice City. Have you played it?
I don't have the necessary equipment to play it, and I don't have the time to play it, but I'd love to.
One of the most interesting parts of Grand Theft Auto 3, as far as the part that Laszlo got me on, was we were able to hack the game from the standpoint of I was able to shout, "Free Kevin!" in the game.
There's a Free Kevin reference.
That's true. That message got out into a whole lot of different like TV shows where they wanted to show like a hacker in his room. What was that TV show on WB that did that? Dawson's Creek?
No, it wasn't Felicity.
What?
Felicity?
What's the other show? Yeah, Felicity. I think that was it. Free Kevin sticker on the wall. And, you know, you just see these things in the weirdest places. And, you know, sometimes they ask permission, which they don't need to do. But it's kind of cool that message got out. I have to think, though, one of the weirdest places I ever saw that message get out was in a cable and wireless advertisement. I think we printed this for free phone service so that you could call your friends. And they were saying, you know, the person's name, and it said Free Kevin, meaning you could call Kevin for free. But it was the same typeface and the same color.
And then there was Forbes magazine, wasn't there? Always media hacking, there's unintentional media hacking with the 2600 Forbes magazine. There was a cover of 2600 probably back in 98, wasn't it?
The subway.
Yeah, the CityCorp 51st and Lexington subway stop where these big LED signs.
It's the one where all the people are coming up the escalator. And there's a sign above them.
There's these big LED signs above the escalators, and someone hacked into those signs to say the Hacker Quarterly and what issue was coming up,
And somehow somebody took a picture of that and ended up on all the major, all the TV news stations in New York, like these hackers hacked the signs. Anyhow, somebody took that picture and happened to know her. And I said, why don't you call AP and see if they want to buy your picture? Because she was a fledgling photographer. She'd never sold any of her work. So she went over to AP and they bought her photographs. So it just ended up in the Associated Press photo database, and Forbes magazine a few years later put it in some article about the economy, not realizing that it said the Hacker Quarterly and what volume and issue it was. So it was just amazing how where this stuff ends up.
Is the statute of limitations over on that yet, do you think?
Well, it was all coincidence. I don't know, you know, I'm not taking responsibility for any of that.
Okay, but just imagine, if you will, someone trying to hack a sign on an escalator, trying to enter whatever code and typing in a message while moving backwards at the same time, and, you know, trying to beat the rush hour because we knew, the people knew that, that the rush hour was going to start and all these people were going to come up the stairs, and that was the cover.
Whoever did it was truly crazy.
It was something. It was genius.
Emmanuel.
But someone asked where I showed up in the other... I'm on the radio. So if you're stealing a car and you're listening to the radio, which I would never do... If you steal a car, you have to concentrate. Never turn on the radio.
Oh, Emmanuel. The free Kevin sticker on Felicity was the work of J.J. Abrams, who's also created Alias. And he contacted me when I was a KFI talk show host and said, hey, I've been watching your case for all these years, and would you come on Alias and play an FBI agent? Right? So, to kind of like get back at the government. So they cast me as a CIA agent in a very small role in the fifth episode, but that's why he put the free Kevin bumper sticker on the show. Yeah. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, definitely. Next question.
I do love Albuquerque. From Albuquerque, West Side. If I may digress to caller ID, Quest has been ripping people off for $2.95 a month with a thing called Security Screen. You can break through it with the complicated acts of optiverting or using a calling card, and of course, spoofing your caller ID at the same time. And also, what was common, what the community had common agreement of what was Flex Annie is now. It has come out that it is CPN, call party number, and you can hear all about that in Default Radio episode 31. So it's changed. Everything's changed. That's from Strom Carlson and some others. So,
can you just tell us, for the people listening, maybe people who don't know, op diverting, give us an example of what that means exactly?
Going through an operator, local op, 1010, 288, many ways.
Getting them to connect a call for you.
That's right.
And very often they don't want to do that. They say they're not allowed to do that, or they can't, but usually they can, right?
I'm special. I'm visually impaired. And, yeah, so again, Quest has been ripping people off for a long, long time. $2.95 a month, they're just...
And tell us something about Default Radio. What's that?
DefaultRadio.com. That's Lucky 225. Decoder was on there. I was on last app. Very good show. Lots of good freaking information. Good stuff.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Leo is a voice for it on the radio sometimes.
Yeah.
You have a question for us.
Well, actually, it's a few comments, but I'll just mention the optiverting really fast right now because he mentioned it. What you do is you call 1010-2880, which is AT&T long distance, then call a Bell South number, which I don't remember, and when you call Bell South using 1010-288, your NEI gets not, from what I understand, does not get passed to Bell South. So Bell South asks you what number you're calling from. You give them any number that's, like, you know, 10 digits, and that's the NEI that they send out, which is why I keep getting phone calls from the White House Situation Room.
Everyone always does the White House. It's the first number anyone ever programs in when they want to send a fake
number. It's the most recognizable number of them all.
You know what the number is?
It's 024 something.
I'm impressed. Thank you.
465 something, but anyway.
202-456-1414.
The thing is, also, the Coke cans, I was reading some article that mentioned that Coca-Cola said they cannot be, the cans with the cellular phone inside look different and are heavier than the normal cans, which makes me wonder how it's a contest that's random. I mean, if somebody behind me can probably answer that.
Hang on, you guys, step up to the microphone.
Yeah.
All right. The Coke contest is actually only in case quantities. When you get a case of 12 cans of Coke, you open it up, and one of the cans will be the special cell phone can. and you can't tell until you've actually opened the case which case contains the cell phone.
Also, in relation to that, the Furbies, they do not record your voice. It's actually just random sounds that they produce, and how they know when you're speaking to them is it sees the amplitude of a sound. So in other words, if you make a loud sound, they respond, and but the NSA didn't know about that. They thought that they recorded your voice, and therefore banned it as a...
Well, they were actually concerned that someone could have hacked a Furby and changed the code in it to actually record classified information. They were that paranoid, but I guess you got to be careful.
Oh, yeah. One more question, which is how do people set up to be volunteers? Where do they go?
How do people become volunteers? Mike, do you want to address that?
They find Carrie. Is Carrie around? Probably.
I think she was over there.
Is Carrie here somewhere?
Last seen down at registration.
She's probably
is a blonde woman and one of the stars of Freedom Downtime.
That's right. But you can also go to the information desk.
Yeah, come to the info desk. If you come to the info desk, I'll make you volunteer for the info desk, which is a wonderful place to volunteer. So all you out there.
Yeah, we really do need people at the info desk, and the importance of that area is that people are here from out of town. They don't know where to go. They don't even know where to go in the building sometimes. So they need a friendly face to help them. And the faces there are friendly enough, but they're sparse, so we need more of them.
And I'm unfriendly, so we need people to counterbalance me.
So we're going to be a lot busier tomorrow than we were today. A lot of people work Fridays. They can't come here, but we're looking forward to meeting them tomorrow. So we need as many volunteers as possible to handle this rush. So please help out. Thanks.
Area 3, come to the info desk.
And the phone losers panel is today at 11. Just plugging in.
Leo's on the phone losers panel. All right. See you there. Yes.
Hi. My name's Michael. I'm another Canadian from Ottawa. And a colleague and I have actually been trying to educate the politicians in Canada to make sure that Paul Martin doesn't fix this, as he said. Just wanted to clarify
Can I interrupt? Have politicians who are capable of being educated? I don't understand that.
Remains to be determined, actually. One of the interesting things is that in our recent election, there was a roll-up to who would be the leader, and the woman who lost the race was in charge of Heritage Canada, who's in charge of all of the laws involving what the record companies are going to take from you. So she lost. She's out. She's not even in there. So they owned her, and doesn't have any power now. So I don't know exactly where that power is going to go, and it remains to be determined. But just to be clear, SOCAN's actually not the group that you think it is. It's not the Canadian version of the RII. There is a group called CRIA, CRIA, and they're the people that are the Canadian version of that. They're the people that have tried to get IP addresses of people, customer information. The case with SOCAN is actually even more bizarre than you'd imagine. The case with SOCAN is a group in Canada that originally listens to radio stations or actually makes you submit playlists, collects money from radio stations and redistributes to artists, not independent artists, not real artists, just record companies, really. But anyway, and we've had for some years a media levy. So you buy a blank hard drive or a blank tape or a blank DVD or CD, you pay a certain amount, it goes to SOCAN, and SOCAN redistributes it. Since you already paid the fine, doing the crime is legal in Canada. That's why you can, quote, download, and I put that in quotes because TCP/IP doesn't really have any concept of upload and download. They're all connections. And the politicians don't get that. Okay? So that's a real question. What is an upload? It turns out that an upload is illegal in Canada. So it's illegal to rip off an artist and give their stuff away. But it's okay to borrow someone's CD and copy it. As long as you are downloading, not uploading. And if you can figure out the difference between those two, you have a future in law in Ottawa. Okay? But just wanted to add, so we have this weird situation in Canada where SOCAN, having lost a particular battle that they just fought to get information, ISPs. ISPs have been said, we're common carriers, blah, blah, blah. We don't have to give this out to you. SOCAN is about to say, aha! Therefore, you have to pay us a subscriber fee for every one of your subscribers. So it's kind of we're between a rock and a hard place. If Creo Run wins, we can't download. If SOCAN wins, we have to pay for the privilege even if we're not downloading. So we'll see what's going to happen.
Okay. This also reminds me of something else that's an example of how government doesn't get it when they make laws, and that's this concept of IP portability. You heard about this, where basically you have the right to your IP if you switch to a different service, and that kind of a thing. It's just it's gonna break things like you would not believe. It's not like a phone number. I guess if we have more time, we can talk about that.
It reminds me of when Congress back when it was the early part of the century, they legislated that pi shall equal a finite number because it was too complicated to to work with. I read this in a book of little known facts. So
it wasn't Congress. It was, I believe, the Illinois State Legislature. I know it was one of the I states.
It was
in
Kansas.
Indiana?
You're right. Indiana.
You're from Illinois, yes. Aren't you? Okay. Okay, Adam has something to add.
Just on the subject of the IP portability issue, the provider that brought us the internet, NAC, they have been sued for a customer that wanted to keep his address base. I actually filed a testimony, you know, stating about how, you know, this goes against every, you know, architectural design of the internet, and we encourage people to actually, you know, if you know about these cases, to actually file testimonies with the lawyers that are handling the defense of these cases, because a judge that says that you can actually port that IP address to a different ISP, you know, how can the judge make that kind of judgment?
You bring up an important point. Alex and folks at NAC.net, they're providing our connectivity as they have for the past few cons. I think they deserve a good round of applause just for their generosity. All right, we only have a couple of minutes left, so let's quickly, Rebel, you've already been up.
Just,
so people
just,
who have not been up,
play the song.
People, you can ask us afterwards.
The song.
People,
you know, the
play
song?
The song during your panel. We don't have time for songs right now. Now, you've already been up. Go ahead.
Yeah, I had a question for Kevin. Can I ask a question?
Sure, go ahead.
Yeah, you were actually in the Screensavers about 3 months ago.
It's the Screensaver show? Yeah. I'm on there a lot. So
yes.
I don't know which episode you're talking about.
There was an episode where you actually got on the internet the first time, and you call, and you defraud the caller ID, and they've been asking all over the forums, how you did it. Was it a Watts extension, or was it like a ISDN PRI connection?
Oh, you're talking about the spoofing the caller ID?
Yes.
Oh, well, there's a particular company that has a telephony developer community, and I was able to work with another friend of mine, and rewrote an XML script, a voice XML script, so we could basically run the script through their site, and we're able to basically punch in through DTMF the number that we're calling and the number we're calling from. It's our script that's running, and their equipment actually spoofs the caller ID for us.
Oh, okay. What, you know exactly what equipment they have?
I don't want to say publicly right now, but you can come and talk to me privately.
Okay, no problem.
Okay, we have time for just one more question. I also wanted to welcome Cheshire Catalyst here, who has been tirelessly working on registration.
Thank you.
And Cheshire, you've been at every one of our conferences, correct?
Yes, this is my fifth HOPE conference.
Right.
I've been here a lot. And 2 years ago when I was here, I actually got something accomplished by being here. Verizon Telephone was not able to be found under directory assistance. And 2 weeks after I got back to work, about the time it takes for a localism to migrate up to the national directory where I and my best friends in my directory assistance call center lived, Verizon worked. We could find their number. So I figured, why should I be the only one to have the access to the internet like this through these streaming servers and what have you? Sunday morning at 10 a.m. is Cheshire's Rants. You will get 45 seconds to rant on anything you want, which will then be on the HOPE Convention website, and you'll be able to give me a hyperlink for us to then link from that website to where the subject of your rant is, but you'll only have 45 seconds to rant on mic.
That's Sunday morning, 10 a.m. right here, Area A. Very quick question, and we're out of here.
Hopefully we have time. It's kind of a complex question, but
make it really simple.
What is the ethical and legal defense for being able to distribute the code for copying DVD copyrighted content?
Oh, boy. You asked that with 10 seconds left in the
Essentially,
show.
It's the same as the ability to use your VCR. If you can use your VCR legally, you should be able to copy your DVDs.
Is that our theme I hear? I believe it is. That means it's time for us to leave you tonight on this special... We have theme music back at the studio. Yeah. There it is. See? A big thank you to the people back at the station, WBAI, and we'll be back with another edition of Off the Hook next Wednesday night at 7. Come to the conference here at the Hotel Pennsylvania, www.hope.net. Good night.
I'm David Rothenberg. One of the real battles in the fight against crime, an arena rarely discussed, is what happens to a man or woman when they are released from jail or prison. Where will they live, earn a living, function in society after being institutionalized? We'll be exploring that in a special edition of Wake Up Call, Tuesday, July 13th. I'll be joined by Stanley Richards, who has experienced all of those transitional hazards, and together we'll talk with men and women who are overcoming the blockade that faces them when they return to society. Join us on Tuesday morning, July 13th, from 6 to 9 a.m. for a special wake-up call program, Coming Home. It's the real battle against crime and creating hope for a forgotten and ignored population.